Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 29th day of August, Anno Domini 2026, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray, choking myself here.
Choking yourself, and as long as it's auto-choking, you're all right. And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be ringing you news, views, things, choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. And, of course, while I'm reading the news, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Before we go on, though, I do want to acknowledge Chris Horn did a great job last week. But
thank you,
we're
Chris.
Delighted to have Steve Ray back.
Although I completely forgot what
we
do
here.
Should
turn your mic on. Is it on?
It is on.
Okay.
Completely forgot what we do here, and so I left my computer at home. So now we're figuring out how to do a quick impromptu StreamYard session.
And you don't have that plugged into power.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, okay.
And that is. But now I don't have a monitor to check YouTube, so if the YouTube audio isn't working right, someone let us know. I think the comments are live on YouTube.
Comments are live.
All right, we're getting it somewhere.
YouTube.
Yeah, we're getting it from my thing. Okay.
Yeah, mute your device.
I did.
Yep.
I think we can still hear me though.
Can you? Yeah. Well, does your device let you mute it?
It did.
Mine doesn't mute. I turned the volume all the way down, and it's just up a hair. Why would you be in a video conference if you don't want to listen?
I'm guessing
their thought. So we just won't mute you. We won't let you mute all the way.
Okay, but I guess.
I don't think the studio mics are picking it up.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, we had a comment that the audio is good. Thank you, Janet D.
Where did you get it?
In the comment window?
I'm looking at the chat.
The YouTube chat? Or the...
Oh, no, I'm looking at the YouTube chat.
No, you're in the private chat. YouTube... all chat, maybe.
Oh,
Live
chat. There we go. I was in the wrong one.
Yep.
Okay, I still don't see anything. It doesn't matter. I'm going to read the news anyway. On Tuesday, Apple announced some new hardware. As to be expected, it was heavily AI-focused. Let's start with the new chips, the M5 Ultra and the M6. The M6, Apple's first 2-nanometer chip, features a larger, more powerful 12-core CPU, 12-core GPU, and dual 16-core neural engine for all your local AI needs. Counterintuitively, the M5 Ultra is actually more powerful than the M6 and is Apple's first quad-die architecture. The chip includes an up to 36-core CPU and up to 80-core GPU with a massive 1.2 terabytes of unified memory bandwidth. As you can imagine, these chips and the systems that contain them are really designed for professionals, particularly in the AI field. The average home user who wouldn't strain a Neo would be wasting their money on these. But if you do a lot of AI or heavy gaming, these may be the chips for you. And if you have, if you hate waiting that extra half second for your spreadsheet to recalculate, go for it. The new Mac Mini can be had with either chip. It also comes with the upcoming Mac OS 27, which includes, of course, Siri AI, which is Gemini under the hood. Siri AI is integrated into Spotlight and system-wide content menus, and users can ask Siri about what's on their display, apparently because they can't see it, with visual intelligence using a dedicated keyboard shortcut. Users can also write and edit with Siri almost anywhere they type. If that's not enough power for you, there's the new Mac Studio. It comes with the M5 Max and the new M5 Ultra. Again, if you're an AI or graphics designer, This may be the system for you. They're particularly designed for local AI development. That's what Apple was especially touting. But if you're seriously into productivity and faster workflow in your business, this can increase your productivity. Of course, with the RAM and storage prices the way they are, brace yourself for sticker shock. Even Apple isn't immune. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple's new hardware. Your choices are, got to get it all. I'm sorely tempted. Looks interesting. Can I run Linux on it? And meh. So far, we've got 27 votes. And meh is in the lead, followed by, can I run Linux on it? The answer is no.
Or it already is.
Well, it already is, kind of yes.
Yeah.
But you can run it under Parallels, of course, or whatever they're calling it this week. But if you've got an old M1 or M2 or a couple of others, you can run Asahi.
Asahi? Is that how you
pronounce Asahi
it?
Linux, yeah. Any rate, so far, like I said, we've got 27 votes. And if you want to vote in the poll, it's real easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Once you're done with that, of course, you can give us a call about that or dang near anything else under the sun at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. I imagine the Mac community was agog.
Well, it answered a question. Why is the M4 Mac Mini so hard to find? We've had them on order since March, and they haven't come in yet. But it also raised another question. You can pre-order these, the new Mac Mini, Mac Studio now, but they won't ship till the end of September minimum.
Right.
So they announced them a month early.
And that's why I said they will come with Mac OS 27, which isn't out yet either.
Which is out, right. So the other thing we're thinking is they wanted to clear the news cycle because they announced their new September 9th is their new
phones.
Likely phones. Was it Surprise and Delight, something like that, in their announcement. And so they let the price cycle go before they start the next press cycle.
Right. Well, but the problem remains cost.
Right. It's $100 more. So the Mac Mini now starts at $899. Which is $100 more than the $799 it was yesterday.
Right.
Which is $200 more than it started at a few months ago, $599. So the $599 Mini was an amazing
deal.
And
no question.
So all the AI companies bought thousands of them, and that's why they were in short supply. So that $200 price hike they had, there's another $100 price hike. The Mac Studio is almost worse. The base model Mac Studio is $500 more than it used to be. And the high end with the Ultra chip is $1,500 more than it used to be. You can max out a studio with 512 gigs of RAM and a 16 terabyte storage drive. It's going to be about $20,000.
Yeah, it's about the price of a used car.
Yeah. RAM and the storage cost more than the computer itself.
Yep. And that's where we are now.
Yeah.
And that's not Apple's fault. But it's going to cut into a lot of sales. Yep. I think we're going to see the same thing with the phones.
Mm-hmm.
If you're either going to have less stuff, less RAM in your phone and less storage in your phone, or you're going to be paying a lot more money.
Yeah.
And there's just no way around that.
Or they don't upgrade the storage like they used to have been.
Right.
So right now the minimum is 256. We could see, hey, you know, this year's phone minimum is 512. No, we'll stick at 256, maybe back to 128.
Yep.
On like the economy phone.
Yep.
The economy phone that's almost $1,000.
Yeah, well, right.
Yeah. But, you know, the Mac Studio, those are Hollywood professionals. The next Transformers movie, the next Jurassic Park movie, you know, they have dozens or hundreds of those monster computers linked together in a render farm.
Right. And that's really who they're aiming at this point.
Yep.
They've realized, I think, that particularly with these high-end machines, they have priced out of the home market.
Yep.
For most people. That's why there's a Neo.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's interesting. So it starts at $699 and goes up to over $20,000.
Right.
That's a wide range. A computer for any price range.
Exactly right. And I get that. And it's not, like I said, it's not their fault. I'm not hitting on Apple for this. It is not their fault that the prices are where they are. It's the same is true of Lenovo and IBM and Microsoft and, you know, everybody. Asus.
Their high-end engineering workstations are ridiculously expensive.
And the low-end stations have less in them than they used to.
Yeah. People were complaining about Apple's $5,000 reference monitor.
Right.
It's competing against a $50,000 Sony monitor in the movie industry. Right. So for $5,000, it's cheap. I can get 10 of them.
Exactly right. And that's, you know, we talked earlier about how a couple of weeks ago about how Microsoft changed their recommendation for Windows 11 from 32 gig of RAM down to 8 gig of RAM. Well, Windows 11 did not get miraculously better.
Nope.
What happened was the prices got unmiraculously more expensive. So I understand that, but you know, we just have to. That's life. Where we live now.
That's the way of life goes.
Yep. Why am I not hearing either of you guys? I don't know why.
Is your volume turned up?
Yeah.
Yeah. It does sound kind of tinny.
Yeah, it does. I don't know. Anyway, on to the phones. Our first caller is Alan from Webster, New York. What's up, Alan?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Just one comment. I can hear Nick, but I can't hear anybody else. They're very faint.
See? I agree with you. And I had to turn up my...
Nick, you'll have to be the spokesperson.
What's your audio input?
Here's what's up. My question is, I need your recommendation for backing up a Windows 11 computer. And let me give you a little bit of background here, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
I had an older Windows 10 computer that I have 5 8-terabyte external hard drives backed up to. I'm an amateur photographer.
Okay.
And I would use that. It's offline. It was about 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I would use that to search my old photos. 2 years ago, I had a solid-state drive put in, and I went to turn it on the other day, and done. Kaput, right? Now, I have all the photos backed up, but I didn't back up the operating system.
That you don't want to do anyways. We never suggest backing up the operating system, only from the standpoint that just in this case, if something happens, I mean, due to a virus or spyware or malware, you don't want to be backing that up. We always tell folks the key thing that you always want to back up, don't worry about the programs. You always want to do a fresh install anyways. You'd never want to rely on Windows reinstalling and, you know, setting itself back up. Do that fresh. Reinstall the programs. The key thing in backups is always back up your documents, your photos, and any other, designs or that type of stuff that you do. Don't worry about the programs.
Okay. With that said, I have a 1-year-old Windows 11 computer that I had here custom built at a shop in Webster.
Yep.
And when this happened, I got home and on a separate external hard drive, I used Windows Tool to back up and image the operating system. So with the program, with my photo editing software, the reason I upgraded was my old computer couldn't run the new update to my photo editing software, and it contains files that I think I can back up when I make changes. There's a part of it that you have to back up to keep your changes and your edits. So you don't recommend backing up like using Windows 7 image tool?
No, because like I said... You know, God forbid, you know, that machine gets infested with, say, spyware and malware, and you're backing that up, and, you know, you're chasing a problem. You know, why is it doing this, or why is it doing that? And, you try to do a restore, well, you're just replacing your problem with the same problem back on there from the restore.
Yeah, so you want to back up your data. You don't need to back up Windows.
That's what I was telling them. Just do the data and program. It would be your photos and any documents that you might have created, or if you've done, say, any images for creating special borders or that type of stuff using a particular package. Those items that you've created, those are the things that you want to back up off on an offsite.
That way, if I do back them up to external,
that's hard drive. You're golden. Don't worry right. about the operating system. Never.
Okay. Well, the other thing is I belong to this photo club, mm-hmm. and some of the people use a program called Backblaze, and the reason they use that is because it has unlimited storage.
And that's offsite on their cloud, yes.
Yep.
Right, yep. right. And with maybe 30 terabytes of photos, I got a lot of photos.
Yep. Yeah, you should. There's a link on our website at soundbites.org under interesting links for a page that I wrote about doing backups.
Mm-hmm.
And the best backup strategy is 3-2-1. Three different backups in two different places, one of which is off-site.
Okay.
So using something like Backblaze or pCloud is an excellent way to assure that you've got an off-site storage that you can get back again right. if you ever need it.
Fire, flood, theft, the mm-hmm. computer and the hard drive sitting next to it are both toast. Yep.
Exactly right. As Dave said, the important thing is your data, in general, anytime your computer borks, you really want to just do a fresh install.
Okay.
It is wonderful if you've got a snapshot and your machine regularly crashes and you just right. and you just want to restore because your machine is old and crappy. You don't really want to be using that machine.
Right.
In any general machine, you really want to just back up your data and 3-2-1 it.
Okay. Right. I think, that really does it. You were talking about the prices of storage. I went out and got a new 8-terabyte Western Digital external hard drive, and the prices shocked me.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. The spinning right. drives are cheaper.
But they still have jumped, too.
But they still have had jumps because they could.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they don't need to, but they could. But right. even so, they are cheaper.
Yeah, that's why I was using. They were like $140 for 8 terabytes. Now they're like $300.
Yep.
Yeah.
Incredible. I can't believe it. Well, it is what it is.
Chips
right?
are in such big demand now. Because of the tariffs and everything else, and using it for AI, you know, in these AI farms, it's only going to be that way for quite a while.
Yeah, and I looked at Backblaze, and that's only like $69 to $100 a year versus now $300 or $400 for an 8-terabyte hard drive. It just doesn't make sense, you know?
Yep.
And it, like you said, it's unlimited storage. It's off-site. It's very important to have at least one off-site backup.
Yes.
If there's anything you actually want to keep.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. Right. Okay, well, I appreciate the advice, and that's why I called. Keep All up right. the good work.
Excellent. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. Yeah, what are we doing now?
That's where it's supposed to be plugged in.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Well, it should work. It should work either way, but now your voice.
Oh, now I can hear you.
There you go. Yeah. So now it's going through.
Okay.
Okay. Let's hope the YouTube audio is still good.
Yeah. Let us know.
Got to get all the ins and outs in the right place and plugged in and everywhere. We should call a computer person, you know?
We should get a computer person.
Someone who knows what
they're
talking about.
We'll let this auto level. This thing auto levels itself. I did not realize that. It's auto. Yeah. It's auto leveling. If I'm a little quieter, it'll be a little louder. That's very nice. That's a feature that's I did probably, not
yeah,
know I had.
It, it's feeding it in. Well, that's your computer doing it, too.
That's what I'm saying.
And it's feeding into the board, which has
its own auto-leveler.
Auto-level normalizes.
Normalizes.
What Audacity calls it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, we're using Steve's iPad and my laptop to do this today, and it's a little different from what we're used to, and so it's taken us a little time to get.
I don't have another device to monitor with.
Say right,
because I'm using both of mine.
You have a phone? You're using your phone.
I'm using my phone to get Dave. On. But we can do that at the break.
Yeah, we'll do mine at the break.
He's taking a call now, but it's seems to be working.
Yeah, still good. Janet says it's still good. Thank you, Janet. where we have the StreamYard comments up, and I don't know if they stream from...
Those are going into YouTube.
Oh, from YouTube to this.
From YouTube
okay.
to us, yep.
Oh, yeah, I see. It is the same. Okay.
There's also a button for a private comment between the people on the stream.
Yeah, okay, but, then I see now, yeah. All right, that makes sense.
Speaking of prices going up, StreamYard, we're using the StreamYard free service.
Yes.
They used to give you three hosts for free.
Right.
So me, Dennis, and Chris. Now you only get one host for free.
Right.
It used to be $20 a month, which, yeah, we don't need that. Now it's $50 a month.
And we really don't need that.
We really don't need that, because most of the time I'm using OBS.
Right.
And doing everything myself. So StreamYard is a nice service. There's Restream.io. There's three or four of these different web streaming services. So you're sending your video to them, and they handle sending it out to the streaming services. You only get one destination for free, so we're using YouTube. In the pay version, you can send to 9 or 10 different destinations simultaneously. So YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, X, Kick. Yeah, Leo Laporte always rattling them off and forgets two or three of them, but
yeah.
They're all turned on.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Ed?
Hi, I wanted to run this by you guys because this has never happened before. I was at the library and just on a Word document typing a letter, and it's Microsoft 11. And normally when you come to the second page, you just put it up there, you know, whether you want it or not, whatever. But this didn't do it. So I figured, well, I'll just have an addendum, so I'll just go to the printer once. So I printed out the addendum, and I put the control P, and the first page disappeared. That's what I spent an hour doing, right? I have no, and I had the librarian look at it. She's supposedly, you know, a computer guru. If it was hidden someplace, no cloud, whatever. But that's never happened before. Is that normal for Microsoft 11 to screw up Word, or what do you think?
Save then print.
Yeah, always save first.
After my wife has lost countless files, she was a professional transcriptionist for a while. She would always print and then save, and then she kept losing her files and have to redo that tape again. Save, then print.
Yeah. So it disappeared from the screen, or it just didn't print?
I can't hear you. Say again?
It disappeared from the screen, or it just didn't print, and it's still on the screen?
No, it was gone. I hit Control-P, and it came up with one page. I said, wait, where's the first page, you know? So I got a hold of the librarian. They looked all around. She looked for, I don't know, 5 minutes trying to find it. No, it was gone. That's never happened before, ever.
Congratulations, you're first.
Using that kind of a computer.
Is it possible you accidentally had the first page selected and then typed the second page over it? Try doing undo.
I used it too much.
Yeah.
I know what... It's a Dell, you know, it's a nice stuff they have, and they've got this, I thought maybe it was 11, but 11 is kind of a standard, you know, where you change the paragraphs, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody had screwed around with the headers before. Sometimes you get somebody in there, and then they'll leave, and they'll get all screwed up, and then when you come along, unbeknownst, it's like defaults to something else.
Yeah.
But this is bizarre. I've never had...
I might have tried undo, first thing.
Might have tried undo. The other thing to try is go into the view menu and select print layout and see what you actually see, and then change it back from print layout to the regular layout and see if it comes back.
Okay, you say print layout, and then what's the next one? I'm sorry.
Whatever it normally is, and I forget the name, but it's...
I think it's normal.
Just normal.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, print layout, and that'll show you what it's going to send to the printer?
Exactly. And always remember to save first, but what I'm saying is, it may be that it is in print layout, and you told it to print only one page, so that's all you're seeing.
Oh, no. I always hit print all, just to be safe, yeah, in case something's lurking in there. Yeah. Okay, no, but nobody could figure it out, so I figured I'd call you guys to see if there's any idea, because, you know, they have some people down there that are fairly sophisticated for printers, but not... like, you know, your knowledge. So I thought I'll try that print layout. Okay, I'm going to go down and try it again. I got a flash drive and all this kind of stuff now. I should have done it on my Chromebook to maybe Google Docs and then have it done and then just send it, you know, to the printer when I get down there. Give it a shot. Okay, because that's weird. I didn't know Microsoft would erase something for you automatically on its own.
Yeah, it
might have just been a random glitch.
Thanks again. Bye, Kate Kinner. Bye.
Yep.
Good luck. I'm sorry. Yeah, listen, folks.
Maybe we made a new document by mistake.
Save all the time.
Get into a habit. You stop and think for a second. Control S on Windows and Command S on the Mac. Just save, save, save.
Or set it to save. I have it save every minute. You can set that in most of them. All right, we got to take a break. Going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And I will read the news, and you will give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. Microsoft just released an optional update for Windows 11. However, take caution before installing it. Some users are reporting that this update can cause serious damage. The most common complaint is mouse pointer resetting to a bigger white Windows 98 style cursor that refuses to change back. The second major complaint is a desktop background wiped out and replaced with a flat black color. And yes, some people are being hit with both issues. So maybe skip it for now, especially since it's optional. Microsoft is rolling out a new Teams meeting protection policy that allows administrators to automatically block all identified external bots from joining Teams meetings. This new feature builds on another Teams. This, of course, doesn't include Copilot. God forbid. Microsoft says this. This new feature builds on another Teams policy introduced in June that added smarter bot protection, ensuring all detected bots are tagged in the lobby and require organizer approval before joining. The new policy goes one step further and will automatically prevent external bots from joining Teams meetings without requiring explicit organizer confirmation before they're admitted. Microsoft has confirmed that .NET framework updates released as part of the August 2026 patch Tuesday are breaking printing and PDF export in some applications. Microsoft says this known issue affects only apps that use the Windows Presentation Foundation, or WPF UI framework, an open-source graphical subsystem for building Windows desktop client applications. Microsoft says it's still investigating the issue. Remember when Microsoft had a QA department? Good times. Microsoft's PhoneLink app, pre-installed in Windows 11 whether you want it or not, displays real-time notifications along with the ability to make or receive phone calls directly on your desktop or laptop. Microsoft is now letting Android device owners remotely shut down or restart their machines when a future update rolls out. We all thought it was going to be in this update, but it wasn't. So if you're waiting for it, keep waiting. Microsoft released the KB Preview cumulative update for Windows 11 versions 25H2 and 24H2, which come with 35 changes, including improvements to the Start menu, Taskbar, and Windows Search. Again, this is a preview release, which most of you don't install, and with good reason. There are usually problems that get fixed before the actual release, so do not install preview updates on your production machine. But you can always give us a call, well, at least on Saturdays between noon and 2, 585-966-JAZZ, it's 966-5299, or toll-free at 800-790-0415. Look, we hear from a lot of people who like to put the preview stuff in because that's, you know, it's the newest, sexiest, mm-hmm. New hotness. I get it.
But it's going to break.
It's going to break. That's why it's a beta. Yep. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind breaking your machine, install it. That's why we say don't put it on a production machine, the machine you use every day. If you've got a second machine that you play with and you want to try that stuff, knock yourself out. If you damage it or if it
crashes
borks,
or bites the dust.
Right. You don't care and it doesn't matter. But in terms of day-to-day use, the machine that you depend upon, like, for example, it's got oh, say your financial data on it, or it's a business machine. Mm-hmm. You really don't want to be installing preview data on that machine. You absolutely do not. So be aware of what you're installing and where you're installing it and what and why you're installing it. You know, if you want to be on the cutting edge, if jumping out of planes is too expensive, start installing betas. So it makes sense to me. That's the only way. But yeah, so I would be very wary of that. And you know, everybody
and don't do it on your main machine.
Well, that's right.
Have a spare machine.
Right. Don't put it on your production device, your production machine. You know, we used to see this all the time. There's a virus on my machine. Well, and I didn't install anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who else uses this machine? Oh, my son sometimes plays games on it. On your production? Well, and it's what I run my business on. Oh, and you let your kid play games on it.
Mm-hmm. I had
That's really smart.
I had a client back in the day. She had a laptop, and she brought it in four different times.
There you go.
It was infected. And she goes, you know, I'm getting a little tired of this. You know, I got to constantly bring it into you. I go, ma'am, we're giving it back to you, and it's clean. It's,
yeah.
What else are you doing? Well, nothing. I mean, my son uses it from time to time. I go, there you go. Well, he's got to download his music and all that.
Oh.
And that's back when BearShare was around. Yeah.
BearShare, LimeWire.
And all those fake songs.
And I says, ma'am,
yep.
The minute you leave here and you go on there and you let him use it, I'm sorry, all bets are off. The best thing for you to do, she goes, what's that? I said, get him his own computer. If he messes it up, then he can pay to bring it in and get it fixed. You know what? She, the following week, went out and got him a laptop, and he messed it up. She goes, just to let you know, he did get, you know, mess it up, and he's saving his money to bring it into you.
Yeah. At least if you're going to let someone else use your computer, give them their own username. Their own user account. Make it a standard account. In fact, you shouldn't even be in an admin account. You should be in a standard account yourself.
That's right. Nobody should be using an admin account day to day.
And then no one can install anything without being the admin.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons Linux is safer than Windows.
Mm-hmm.
When you run it, you do not run as admin. You can run as admin, of course, but you normally don't.
On the very few occasions you actually need to install something, you can type the admin password.
Right.
Most of the time, you don't need to install anything after you've already got it set up. And then suddenly the drive-by download from the malicious ad on a legitimate website can't install because you're not the admin.
Yep. That's right.
Or if someone starts asking for your, you know, enter your admin password pops up and you didn't know you're installing anything, hit cancel. Hit no. Cancel.
Say no.
Exactly. Something bad is trying to get in.
Exactly right. So yeah, there's Windows is trying to be better about that. You know, back in the day, there was no security, and Windows basically still is in that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
The Mac is more like Linux.
Yes, you're not root, but you're still admin.
Right.
We wish Apple would
separate them.
Yeah, tell you to set up an admin and now set up your day-to-day account.
Right. Whereas in Linux, you're not the admin.
Mm-hmm.
You are, when you set up an account, it is your account. You can do admin things. Mm-hmm. You type sudo, S-U-D-O.
Sudo make me a sandwich.
Sudo make me a sandwich.
Yeah, sudo make me.
And then it will ask for your password. And if you then provide it, it will do that thing.
Otherwise, no show, no go.
Well, that's the latest social engineering hack coming from malicious ads, or you think you're trying to log into your bank, and it pops up and says, here, paste this into a terminal window. Here's how you find terminal.
Right.
And never paste anything into the terminal window from another source you don't know.
Right. Even if you go on ChatGPT or one of those, and it shows you what to type in, underneath it'll say, you know, this is dangerous. Yep. Be careful of what you're doing here.
Apple did, and I think Microsoft also did, added a warning. If you paste something into the terminal, it says, are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah. What Linux does on most versions is it pops it up into an editor. So you have to hit enter at least twice.
You can see the command. You have no idea what it's saying, but at least you can see
it. You can see it, yeah.
If it starts with C-U-R-L, it's bad.
Oops.
Actually, I saw, I was looking at Asahi Linux today, as a matter of fact. If you've got an old M1 or M2 Mac that is no longer updated by Apple, your choices are it's e-waste, or you can put Asahi Linux on it, and they do that through a curl, which is a way to download a program from the internet from the command line. And you know, obviously, if you're going to put Linux on any computer, you have to have at least a modicum of personal responsibility that you are doing this. And so, you know, if you type curl something into your computer, you better know what it is you're curling.
Yeah. It's not C URL.
Right.
Or C-U-R-L.
Right. It's can't use really legitimately is what that stands for. curl is a program that lets you that essentially does like it downloads something from the internet to your desk, to your hard drive, in whichever folder you're in at the moment.
And
from the command line.
The way command lines work, you can chain commands together. So you can say download, install, execute in one giant
string. Right, in one giant thing. So,
yep.
It's a dangerous command. So if you see someone saying, send you a command that starts with curl, C-U-R-L, think five or six times before you do anything with it. Again, you know, it's a legitimate command which has legitimate uses. It really comes from the days before there was a graphical internet.
Mm-hmm.
You could grab a program from somewhere or a file from someone using curl, and it would come to your machine, and you could then do whatever you did with it.
This week was the 35th anniversary birthday of Linux.
Yep.
When Linus Torvalds posted in the Minix group, was it?
Minix.
I've made this new thing. You know, let me know what you think.
Yeah.
So there were all these
memes. It's never going to be a real program. Yeah. It's a hobby.
Yeah.
I'm just playing. Tell me what you think.
People started, they were posting memes about, oh, well, I've made your birthday cake. And it was a carton of eggs, a gallon of milk, a thing of butter, a thing of flour. All you have to do is compile it yourself.
Yeah. There's a T-shirt that says, it's been 0 days since I compiled a kernel.
Yep.
We used to have to do that all the time. Well, it used to be with WordPerfect.
Mm-hmm.
You had to install drivers into the program itself.
Right. Mm-hmm. Each program, you had to install a different printer driver for your printer.
Right. Exactly. You know, those days are long gone, with thank heaven. But you know, you used to have to do that. And you can still compile a kernel if you want to. That you have Arch Linux. Knock yourself out. Arch Linux, you basically write a script that says, I want this type of system. I want it to have this graphical user interface. I want it to have these programs. Here's my hardware. And then it actually writes a script. You write the script, and then you execute it, and it downloads all the pieces, compiles a kernel, and creates a system for you. And if that's your bag, God love you. You know, knock yourself out.
A lot of free
for
time.
The rest of us, there's Ubuntu and Linux Mint and Zorin and, you know, all the and MX Linux and all the others, which just you click a button and it installs just the way Windows installs. And you never have to think about compiling anything ever.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just does it.
Right. It just does it for you. And that's, you know, again, I started my first Linux experience was with something called Yggdrasil, which is the world tree in tree Norse mythology. And it was daunting, actually. Not even difficult. It was all the way to daunting. Dang near impossible. I almost gave up entirely on Linux because of it.
Oh.
Nowadays, literally, it's you burn a thumb drive and say install and
it does it.
Wait a minute and you're done.
Yep.
So, you know, it's not the difficult problem it was. Asahi Linux is a little harder because Apple doesn't want you putting anything else on there. Even machines they've abandoned completely. So it's a multi-step process, although they've made it simple. You download this curl program and you run it, and it says, okay, let me go look at your machine. Oh, you have all of these things. Here are the versions of Asahi Linux that will run on this machine. Which one do you want?
Yep.
And then it says, okay, you have to dual boot because Apple doesn't let you boot another operating system.
You can boot another Mac operating system.
Right. Well, you've already got a Mac operating system that is no longer supported. So you can say, okay, I want the minimum amount of space for the Mac operating system and all the rest of it for Linux. And it goes, okay. And it says, there you go. And now when you boot it up, up comes Linux and you're done.
Similar to the way Apple's Boot Camp used to work.
Exactly.
Windows on an Intel Mac. So fortunately, or unfortunately, depending on what side you're on, the current OS 26 is the last OS to support Intel-based Macs.
Right.
The first M1 came out in 2020. So OS 27, which is coming out this fall, and the new computers are going to be on it, will not support Intel Macs. It will be
M chips only.
M chips or the A chip on the Neo. So Apple, Apple Silicon only.
Right.
And we've already started getting warnings because I still have an Intel Mac. I have 2019 at work. Because I'm hardly ever at the desk. I'm always working on someone else's computer. We're getting warnings about this program's not going to be supported because the other thing they're taking away is full Rosetta compatibility.
Oh, dear.
So Rosetta was the translation layer that let Intel programs work on Apple Silicon. It's actually Rosetta 2. The original Rosetta let PowerPC programs run on an Intel Mac. This is the fourth major chip redesign for Apple. Some of the Intel machines, Intel software, if you're running something more than 7 years old that hasn't updated to Apple Silicon yet, skip the OS upgrade or keep an old computer lying around for it.
Or put Linux on it. I don't like unsupported operating systems.
Also,
so I would put Linux on it.
The other thing that's happening is Apple has deprecated SMB version 1.
Sure.
And it is no longer available in OS 27. So you cannot use your Apple Time Capsule, which was discontinued 8 years ago.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But still works fine. I'm using one myself.
Yeah.
Because it only uses SMB 1, which is horribly buggy and vulnerable to a lot of exploits because they stopped updating it. We're in SMB 3 now.
Right.
So at Mac Ave, we started selling Buffalo NAS, inexpensive 2 terabyte NAS to replace the NAS functions of the Time Capsule. Time Capsule was great. It did 4 things. It was an Ethernet switch. It was a Wi-Fi router. It was a print server, and it was a network backup drive. No one makes a single box that does all 4 things anymore. If you're lucky, you get 3: the network switch and some of the Linksys routers have like a USB port you can hang a separate hard drive on,
right,
to become network storage. But so now we've got this nice NAS, which is especially handy for laptop users. We had a laptop in the other day. Last backup was 3 years ago, when the last time we brought it in for service.
Yeah,
because they forgot to plug the hard drive back in when they got home 3 years ago. So having a network drive, in fact, for anybody now, having a laptop that you carry around means you probably aren't plugging in your backup drive. We always used to say when you plug the laptop into power, then you plug your backup drive in too to back up. But the batteries last so long, people don't plug it in that often anymore. Yeah. So you can get an inexpensive network attached storage drive and back up all the computers on your network over your network. And for laptops, it can do it wirelessly.
Right.
So you don't have to remember to plug it in.
Right. And what that does take, if you've got a decent network, which everybody does these days, it takes no real time
First backup may take hours, so just let it run. But successive backups are generally just do changed files, And that's usually so fast you don't realize it's actually happening.
Right. I back up my network every day at 2 a.m. to four different places. Might be five now. Once I set it up, I don't care anymore. I forget about it. I just go check them once in a while.
Backup successful. Zero files copied.
Yeah, exactly.
Oops.
I do check the logs, but I don't you know, I don't look at the files every day, but I do look at them regularly. That's part of being a systems administrator, and all of you are now a systems administrator. I'm sorry, you just are. And that's just the way it works.
Speaking of administration, we talked off the air, but not on the air. Last week's caller, Mary, was it, who was trying to hook up her computer to her printer wirelessly, but keep her Windows 10 computer off the internet. Many printers, especially HP, have a system called Wi-Fi Direct, and that will let you create a point-to-point network between the computer and the printer just for printing. So the computer has no chance of getting to the internet. It just can print. It's designed for you have guests in your house and they want to print. You don't give me your main network password. You let them connect directly to the printer. So that may be an option for you, still being able to wirelessly print. A lot easier than setting up your router to block internet connections to that MAC address.
Right. Not everybody can figure out a pie hole.
And not every router has that feature. A lot of the basic consumer, we love the Eero router for its simplicity and ease of setup. And we hate the Eero router for its management tool. I can't even get a DHCP table out of it.
Right.
I can list all the computers using it, but I can't get a DHCP table. I have to look individually.
The same thing is true of the Google Nest router. For the average home user, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's horrible.
Yeah. But it's inexpensive. It's easy to set up. So it's great for you. Great for you. That's always the dichotomy. It's great for the end user. It's horrible for the IT people.
You're right. Exactly.
I can't manage it. I can look and see that it's not working. That's the amount of the management you have.
Yeah. It's been quite a dichotomy between what you want to do easily and what you can do for the average device. You just have to spend a lot more money to get the features that you want if you're the sort of person who needs to tinker.
And it's a lot safer than the olden days when every router was Linksys and every password was Linksys.
Yep.
It had all that management capability behind it. In fact, the OpenWRT, a great open source router OS that you can put on compatible hardware to give you all of those features. If you can find a compatible router.
If you can find a compatible router or a different box.
Yeah.
And there's a thing called Pi Hole. You set up a Raspberry Pi between your internet connection and your router, between the cable modem or the fiber connection and your router. And then it manages all of that stuff. And one of the things it can do is block ads. And it has a table of bad sites that it won't let you go to or won't let come to you. It's an amazing device, but you have to set it up, and it ain't easy.
If you don't want to go that far, you're not that technically adept, Cloudflare has some DNS entries you can use. Normally, when you're setting up your router, it just picks the DNS from your internet provider, which is fine. But you can change the DNS entries to get a faster DNS. In fact, GRC has a DNS benchmark program where it tests the nearest 1,000 DNSs to see which one is better. But you can use 1.1.1.1. A lot of people have been using 8.8.8.8, which is Google.
9.9.9.9 is better.
Yeah. So 1.1.1.1 is just straight DNS. 1.1.1.2
right.
Filters. There's two filters.
That filters bad stuff.
Bad stuff. And then 1.1.1.3 filters a whole lot more. A
whole lot more.
Yeah.
And 9.9.9.9 is also fast and safer alternative. So if you've got the sort of router where you can set your DNS settings, mine are set to 9.9.9.9 and 1.1.1.2.
Mm-hmm.
So,
or you can use OpenDNS, which has a service to let you do that. And I think for the free service, they can even give you logs as to what what computer went where.
Right. Right. And that's stuff you normally don't get.
It's not your 14-year-old son. It's your 38-year-old husband.
But yeah, there's a lot of features that we don't use on the internet normally. Some of them are easy, like just changing your DNS.
You just do that in your router. Greece, Rochester.
Just play anything; it's fine. But some of them are hard, and I don't expect anybody to do those. All right, listen. That music tells us the first hour of this show is in the history books, but do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show coming your way. That's right. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, and a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We're going to take a break. I'm going to play with my pocket term 35, and we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites shortly.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. And the charming and delightful Dave Enright has an announcement about next week.
Yeah. For folks that have been keeping track, next week starts our 38th year.
Seventh.
37th? I thought it was 30. We're going into 30. It just seems like eternity. What can I say?
Seems like an eternity, particularly with you two guys. You have no idea.
Well, the one thing I can say, though, is it has lasted longer than my first marriage.
Yes. Yes, it has. The show is older than my daughter.
Yeah. So, we start. We'll be celebrating 37 years on the air. And what, 18 years now? It'll be starting 18 years. I think it was 18 years starting in June for here.
Yeah, 17 years, 2 months, and 23 days on the air here.
Okay.
And so far, 36 years, 11 months, and 26 days.
Started, though, back on Labor Day weekend, folks. Many years ago.
Many years ago. Man, I remember that first day, the great Bob Smith. And I sitting there, opening the mic, thinking, this is, we'll take a couple of weeks, see how it goes.
No advertising, no promotion. Just
no promotion. We were just there. We were just there. And the phone started ringing. Well, remember when we started on television? Our news.
Same there.
We sat there and Ginny Butler.
Yeah, she was in a panic. She didn't think that anybody was calling. We'll go, no, they'll call.
Yeah, she said, I didn't prepare anything. I didn't know I was going to do this. I have no questions. We said, Ginny, your entire job will be to say, and our next caller is. I promise you that's all you'll have to do.
And that's what happened.
And in fact, that's exactly what happened.
She was stunned after it. She goes, I can't believe it went that well.
Nobody ever calls this much. Yeah.
Some people just leave the station on all day long. It doesn't matter what's on. They just listen to it.
Well, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. All right, but we're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York. What's up, Brian?
Hey, guys. I'm just as old as you are.
I know that. So what's up?
I've been listening since the Dr. Bob days, which I say every time I call you guys.
Yep.
But anyway, a couple weeks ago, a couple weeks ago. Oh, by the way, the YouTube feed is actually above average today for some reason. That's usually been a weak sister lately, but it's actually the troubles you're having today actually are benefiting YouTube. So,
huh? Apparently, my machine is better than your Mac. My 14-year-old.
Bear with me, because you're
what?
Bear with me. You guys are cutting in and out. You guys are cutting in and out. So, just bear with me. I wanted to give you the benefit of my experience with video editing on Linux. A couple of weeks ago, you had a couple callers call in asking about getting started with it. And I have slowly morphed my way into using Linux, doing video conversion for friends and family. And a couple of things I can tell you. Kendiv is definitely the pick of the litter for software to use on at least Mint. The one thing that I do would like to pass on anyone who's new to it or getting started with it, you need to be backing up constantly as you work, because video editing is crash prone.
Oh yes.
And also something that really, really helps out a lot. Backup, of course. And then before you do any rendering, you can compile all you want, but frequent reboots help out considerably with the process. And then once you go to render, clean boot absolutely, and turn off even your Wi-Fi. Turn everything off. And things will go a lot smoother for you, especially on the older machines with lower memory counts. So,
right, right. Kaden Live. Go ahead.
Guys, I'm going to hang out. You're cutting in. I can barely hear you. But hey, thanks for everything you guys do. Great show as usual. And we'll call you next time.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, Kaden Live, K-D-E-N Live, is a free video editor, and it is quite good.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who say it's as good as the professional ones. I've never used a professional one, so I don't know that. But they say it's exceptional. K-D-E-N Live, it's available for just dang near every Linux distribution. But, you know, even Linux isn't magic. If you've got an old, slow machine, it's going to do old, slow video editing. That's just the way that works. But it is an excellent program, and it does let you edit all kinds of video. You can do multiple tracks and transitions and just everything in a very professional manner. And again, it's free on pretty much every Linux distribution there is. You do want a lot of RAM. That's just video. You want a decent graphics card. Again, that's video. But it will do pretty much everything you want to do. Kaden Live, K-D-E-N Live. It's a pretty amazing machine, and it's in everybody's distribution. Just look for it in your distro, and you'll find it. And of course, you can look for us by giving us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll free at 800-790-0415 while I read the security news. Ads and tracking have turned TVs into privacy nightmares. Both are widespread among smart TVs. One recommendation to avoid them is to use a computer monitor. But in recent years, monitors have become more capable of pushing ads and tracking users. LG lost some trust after a recent report that some of its monitors installed McAfee pop-up ads onto connected computers. Since at least 2024, some of these displays installed an app, LG Monitor App Installer, onto connected computers under the cover of driver updates installed through Windows Update. But what it really did was pop up ads for McAfee. Microsoft has since forced LG to remove the McAfee ads. How dare they encroach on Microsoft's prerogative to show us ads we don't want? LG's and Samsung smart monitors use the same ad-serving OSs as their respective smart TVs do, so brace yourselves. Using a virtual private network is a surefire way to keep your information when browsing the internet. But a new report from Proton, released on Wednesday, exposes some major holes in that concept. 64 of the VPN apps downloaded in the U.S., Proton found, are owned by Chinese companies and contain trackers that collect all sorts of user information, including device IDs, network information, device models, and mobile carrier data. And 25% of all VPN apps were found to actively track your location. In June alone, these apps were downloaded over 13 million times. It should be clear that China isn't the only country where companies harvest the data these apps collect, but it's near the top of the list. Russia and the Five Eyes companies, Australia, Canada, U.S., the U.K., and the U.S., all have companies collecting tracking data from millions of people. Many Americans feel growing unease about the proliferation of cameras in people's hands, on homes and businesses, and public spaces for police use that seem to be capturing our every move, sparking backlash, protests, and users ditching or destroying devices. Now, Ring, one of the largest home security camera providers in the United States, is rolling out a new encryption technology that it hopes will give customers more confidence about the privacy of their cameras and footage. Ring's update definitely means customers won't have to worry about any third parties, including law enforcement and Amazon itself, viewing their home security footage without their consent, according to Ring, which is owned by Amazon. That was already Ring's policy, but the new form of encryption, they say, enforces that on a technical level. We'll see. Hackers are attempting to exploit two new critical authentication bypass vulnerabilities in the Mini Orange 2.0 single sign-in plugin for WordPress that can be used to forge responses and log in as administrators. The WordPress administrator dashboard will not show update warnings for the paid versions of the plugin, so website owners must manually upgrade to a patch release. And people wonder why I hate WordPress. But don't hate us. Give us a call instead. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. Yeah. Lots of people have been using old monitors as their television sets because, A, they've got pretty much the same resolution anyway.
Yeah. Or better.
Or better. And nowadays, people are just plugging devices like Fire Sticks or Apple TVs or Google Homes into them and not using the features built into the television anyway.
Yeah.
So why pay for a smart TV you're not using as a smart TV?
We used to get questions, you know, why is a television cost $200, but a computer monitor costs $500? So, well, your television is doing 300 lines.
Right.
And your computer monitor is doing 640.
640.
At the time, yeah. And then.
Well, more than double.
More than double, yeah. And then, so now they've started merging. So pretty much any monitor you buy these days is 4K. And the really cheap monitors are still only 1080p, but that's high def.
right.
Yeah.
So you can buy a fairly inexpensive monitor, hook a cheap device to it, whether, again, it's a Google Home or Google Chromecast or an Apple TV Plus or a Fire Stick or whatever, Roku, whatever you want. And
or even a cable box.
Or even a cable box. And get all the features you would have gotten from a smart TV at significantly lower pricing.
Yeah.
So, you know, people, this whole smart TV business, I'd rather just buy a big monitor.
Yeah.
Spend the same amount of money and get double the real estate. Why not?
And they only last a couple of years, and you buy another one. I've told this before. Like 10 years ago, I started buying. I bought a 50-inch TV for $500. And then it broke a couple of years later. And then I bought a 55-inch for $500. And then I got a 65-inch for $500. Well, now the 75s are $500, but my 65 is still working fine.
Yeah, right.
And the 85s are coming down.
Right. So, yeah, you can pretty well do all kinds of stuff with those. You know, you can put any streaming service on any one of those little devices.
And a lot
plug it into the back of any monitor you've got, and now you've got a streaming television.
And some of the smart TVs only work with some streaming services.
Right.
Like you can get Netflix, but not Hulu.
Right.
And so that's something to look at when you're looking at a streaming TV. Does it accept the, or does it have the apps you want? Does it have an app store where you can add more apps when you want to get a new service?
Well, that's one of the things that I don't like about Kindles. I have books on Nook.
Yep.
I have books that I've bought and downloaded and I want to use on my own. I've got books in the Kindle store. I've got books from Libby. Where am I going to read them? I can't read most of those on a Kindle.
Right.
You can't get those apps.
Yeah.
So I have to buy an Android tablet of some sort. I've got Books Poke 5, but, you know, whatever Android tablet you've got will do that. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
So many bad things. There's not enough time in your show.
Sure.
I'll start with my problem where I began. I got a HP ProBook 640. I'm trying to rehab, and it's got to be Windows for the time being until the ESU runs out. I signed it up for the ESU. It shows on the page that it's signed up. It's enrolled. It seems to download everything, but I still get a message. Your device is missing important security and quality fixes. And this is like day three of trying to figure out this problem. Or, you know, and it's not a Windows problem. There's something about the laptop itself, because every time I go to update, I just check for updates. So there's really nothing to update except it keeps updating something to do with the sound system. Was it Conexant, which is, I guess, the sound?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
I got all kinds of other trouble following that, but we'll just...
Okay, so the first question is that message you're getting that you're missing important fixes. Is that the entire message? Because I know that Microsoft has a message like that that essentially says you're missing important fixes. You should dump Windows 10 and put Windows 11 on.
Can't.
No, I understand that. But I'm saying that if that's the message you're getting, there's nothing you can do about that. That's just Microsoft annoying the heck out of you because they want you on 11. Never mind that you can't.
Well,
they don't care.
All right. It also says you're not up to date, even though I've been getting updates every time I click on it.
But again, the rest of the message, check to see if it says update to Windows 11, because if it does, then that's simply Microsoft screaming at you that you're using an operating system they don't want to support anymore.
Well, and I mean,
the ES.
This looks like a legitimate problem. I'm on the Windows Update page. And I'm already enrolled in the extended security update.
And it says that on the right-hand side of that Windows Update page? Okay.
Yep. But even though I've been, you know, regularly click it for updates, and sometimes it gets them, or sometimes I'm up to date, but says still I'm not up to date.
What's the full exact wording of the message?
Well, Windows Update, and it says you're not up to date, last checked today, 11:22 a.m. And then the next line down in red, it says your device is missing important security and quality fixes.
This is Windows 10?
And then below that, it should let you install what it thinks it's missing.
It's not. And I've been on the internet with all this stuff. And it's a problem. And there's like a million different things that I have tried. There's even a standalone program called Update Fixer. There's like a whole bunch of different procedures. The DS something with the DISM thing.
Yeah. All right.
And
so
then you run.
There are a couple of things you should try. The first thing to try is. And this sounds stupid. Go into the date and time settings. Turn off set time automatically. Wait about 10 seconds and then turn it on again so that it resyncs to Microsoft servers. Because it might be that it thinks the time and date are wrong. The next thing to do is to run the troubleshooter.
Yeah.
So that's under...
I have done that several times.
Okay, the one under additional troubleshooters?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tech Guy IT in the YouTube chat says that's a known bug with ESU, and he's seen it on his machine too.
Can't hear you, Steve.
We have somebody in the chat, Tech Guy IT, says it's a known bug with the ESU.
So I'm actually getting the updates.
Yeah, it's just telling you you're not.
Lying to you.
Theoretically, that will be in one of the next bug fixes.
The other, there is one last thing to check, however. If you go into Windows Update, Advanced Options, make sure that Receive Updates for Other Microsoft Products is checked.
Yeah, did that too.
Okay, then it's definitely the bug.
Yeah. I even compared the KB numbers and the ones like on some of these websites on Reddit, you know, well, check this and check that. So those KB numbers that say make sure you got this, they're all there on the machine.
Yeah, well, that's what we're saying. Okay. It's a bug.
Yeah, they're just not getting, you're getting the patches in there. It's just not recording it and acknowledging it within Windows. There's a glitch there.
Yep.
And the security, the ESU extended security updates doesn't install feature updates. So technically it's correct. You're missing updates because they just aren't available for you. But security updates should be. So, it's probably a reporting error.
Feature updates. Yeah, I've gotten feature updates from recent updates. Because I got it. It was a fresh download of the Windows ISO. So, anyway, okay, I got plenty to work on there. So, the other thing, which this is just a comment, sort of. I was able to install, install Xorin using the Ventoy.
Yeah.
But, okay, when I tried to install it next to Windows, it failed.
Oh, dual boot?
I think it might be because of Ventoy, but I'm not sure. So I'm actually downloading a new Direct, and they got Bolina on the new machine, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the only other thing was that I have been poking around in the BIOS, and I think I made some unfortunate choices along the way. And I've reset this and reset that, but I think there's some kind of security keys that the BIOS needs to see. And I remember I actually got one thing to work, but I don't remember how I did it. So I'm not going to even ask you for any help with that.
But you can always do a factory reset in your BIOS.
It's an old HP, and I think there's something to do with they didn't like you messing around.
Yeah, but even within the BIOS, you can go back to factory defaults.
Yeah, well, I've done that several times.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there's a couple of things here. Ventoy doesn't manage internal drive partitioning, right? So you have what you have to do first is it depends on how you're installing, how your computer boots. If it's UEFI, your internal hard drive has to be partitioned as GPT. That's one of the choices when it's partitioned. If you're using legacy, it's MBR. And if you mismatch those, it will block the installation. And also, you have to disable secure boot, particularly if you're dual booting, and if you're installing via Ventoy.
Yeah.
Also, you have
That's as much information as I can actually take in right now.
Well, there is one more thing, I'm afraid. It doesn't do partitioning by itself, you have to do that on your own and create that unallocated space before you run Ventoy.
That you'd have to go in under Windows, the computer management, and the hard drive you can take.
And then disk management.
Yeah, and disk management, and you can take part of that hard drive that's free and set up a new volume within that hard drive.
Well, maybe I'll just make a dedicated USB with Xorin.
There you go.
That part sounds a lot easier.
That might work.
The trick is that the thing doesn't want to recognize the USB when I go to the pick the boot device. But that's all because I messed up other stuff in there. Yeah, I'm done.
All right. Good luck.
But thanks for them pointers.
Yep. Yeah, as we say, whenever you do something, try to make one change at a time.
And write it down.
That's also important. Is your mic on? Oh, no, you're not looking in the mic. That's why. Yeah, it's we've talked about this before, making a site book. Every time you make a change, write it down. That way, if you have to go back and unchange something, you know what you changed.
And the next time that problem happens, you can see what fixed it.
I had a machine that just borked, and I had to put a whole new drive in it. Rather than have to remember what was on it, I opened the site book I'd created because I was a system administrator for 20 years. I make site books. I just went step by step by step by step by step. And 15 minutes later, my new machine looked exactly like my old machine. Perfect. Real simple, real fast, real easy. And I understand it's a pain in the patoot to make a system like that, to make a site book. But you know what? In the long run, it saves you a lot of pain. All right. Speaking of pain, back to the phones. Our next caller, that may not have been a good segue. Our next caller is Henry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Henry?
I've got a printer problem that I'm hoping maybe you can help me with. I've got an HP OfficeJet Pro 6968 all-in-one printer, scanner, fax machine. It's about 8 years old. I recently, a few months ago, it stopped printing color. And I thought that what the problem was that the color cartridges, the two of them were low, and the one was very low. So, but since then, I've gotten new cartridges sent to me from HP. I've installed them. The printer shows full cartridges, and it still does not want to print color.
All right, hang on. Henry, hang on. We got to take a break, but stay on the line. We'll come back to you when we come back, okay? Okay. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Henry, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Henry from Rochester, New York on the line. You still there, Henry?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, so
did you get what I said earlier? I'm sorry, I was trying to get as much in as I could before the break.
That's all right. It's entirely all right because I think there's two things you really need to check immediately. First, in the print driver, check that it hasn't changed to grayscale rather than
color. No, it has not.
Color.
Check that.
Or the wrong
color. And if it was grayscale, wouldn't the color areas still be there, but gray?
Maybe.
Some variation of black? I print a color, something color, yeah, there's just nothing on the page.
Okay. Then in that case, you need to, also check whatever word processor you're using or graphics program to make sure that it's printing in color and if it gives you that option. And the third thing to check.
It does.
The 13th thing to check is to run the printhead cleaning tool.
Have done that multiple times.
Does color come out then?
I'm sorry.
Does color? Does it print in color when you print that cleaning tool?
No. Doesn't print color at all, no matter what I print.
So even if you print the test page
from the printer itself, skip the computer completely.
Right.
Nope. I've tried printing that. I've tried. The printer has a demo page on it.
Yep.
That says, you know, I've tried printing that. I'll see all the black, but where there should be color.
Malfunctioning printer.
Yep.
Yeah, the printer's broken.
I take a picture of a person. I print that. I see the black background. There's black background.
But it thinks it's printing.
What's like
a person, all white.
What's likely happening is that
the head's clogged.
The heads are clogged.
They're so clogged, the cleaning can't fix them.
Right.
It's so the ink in there has gotten all dried up.
Yeah,
how old is the printer?
Well, it's 8 years old.
Henry?
Eight. Yeah.
Henry?
Yeah.
It's you know what the solution is?
You know what the solution is, Henry.
Buy a new printer.
Well, probably buy a new printer, but it prints perfectly well, black and white.
Well,
use it mainly as a scanner as well.
Is there
something I can do to clean those heads?
You might. It's going to be hard to recommend.
No,
you might go on YouTube and find a way to take the entire print head mechanism out of the printer. And clean the heads.
Okay, I probably don't want to do that.
And flush the tubes.
Why are there separate print heads for the color and the black?
Yeah, each one.
Well, there are separate tubes
for each color
that run the color into the print head. And if the clog is in the tubes,
right.
Okay.
So most
because
of
it prints perfectly black.
And because that tube is not clogged,
and it doesn't print any of the colors,
right?
Because all of those tubes are clogged.
All it has to do is at where these. Three nozzles merge. All it had to do was have one of the colors get a clog in it, and it got to the where the colors would spray, you know, to give you the, say, light blues or reds or where it would mix it, is clogged now. So no matter what color you try to push through there, it is clogged and baked in there. After 8 years, it's not going to do it. So be happy that you got at least black and white. And live with that.
It's like the hardening of your arteries.
Yeah,
the blood's been flowing fine for all this time, but now the clot has progressed too much.
Right.
Exactly.
The problem with all inkjet printers is that if you don't print regularly, and regularly is a variable depending on
room condition,
humidity, temperature, all kinds of stuff. If you don't print regularly, those tubes will clog. If you're lucky, they clog at the print head, and the print cleaning tool, the print cleaning program, will break up that clot. But if it happens inside the tube, you're done.
Okay. Secondary question to that.
Yeah.
One of the things that I really need to print this within the next week is I need to print a pass that has on it a QR code. Now, if I print it out, it prints out nice and black and white. But on those QR codes, is there a color component of those that
generally
may not be printing correctly?
No.
Generally, no.
Black and white.
Sometimes you can put a color logo in the center for whatever company has created the QR code.
If you don't see color on the screen, there's no color to print on the printer.
They usually don't.
Oh, okay. Okay, so if I just let it print black and white, what's on these... in color, I don't care about.
Right.
All
that's
really important is the text and the QR code.
Well, that is something to try, then.
Okay, so if I print that, I should be okay.
Turn grayscale on and see if it prints where the colors should be.
That's true.
Because it should, then.
Okay, I haven't tried that. Yeah. I have not tried that.
The other thing you can do for QR codes in general is I use an Android, so I have Google Keep. And I tend to put all my QR codes into Google Keep, and then I just show my screen when somebody wants to scan my QR code.
Yeah, well, I don't have a I don't have a smartphone that I can show that with.
Okay.
I'm still using an old style flip phone.
Wow, good
there,
for you.
There are new smart flip phones.
There are that. There are those.
People that like that old flip phone but want the smart features.
Yeah. That's another question maybe for another day, because I'm looking maybe to go towards that.
Yeah.
But that's something we can discuss maybe some other time.
Some other time. All right. Thanks, Henry. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 800-790-0415.
If you need something to do today or tomorrow, remember the 23rd Annual Northeast Helicopter Jamboree.
It's the Helicopter Jamboree.
Helicopter Jamboree all weekend long. We're going to have a night show tonight. No fireworks this year. Unfortunately, their prices got too high. But we're still going to
do all the RAM and the fireworks.
Yeah, we're still going to do a night show at 2529 Macedon Center Road in Palmyra. Concessions are there. If you like helicopters, come on out. We've got scale helicopters. We've got 3D helicopters. We've got 4D helicopters.
4D helicopters?
Yeah, I don't know. They look like grass dragonflies, and they fly around even more radically than 3D. Yeah.
Okay.
George has a really, really nice Augusta 119 and a EC-1500 with Grand Canyon logo. It's a lot of times, especially the scale helicopters, will have the livery of an actual full scale. And I guess he got to fly in that helicopter for real over the Grand Canyon, and so that's why you got that model.
Nice. Hmm. All right. That's way too much geeking out on helicopters.
Yes.
All right. Ads and tracking have turned... Oh, I read that already. I'm not going to read that again. I'm going to read the miscellaneous news now. Microsoft. Yeah, there we go. No, that's the Microsoft news. Where the heck is...
Turn it around.
The other, what?
I've never seen anyone flip their paper around like that before. They usually go straight over. Yeah.
I picked up the wrong side of the paper. That's why. Yeah. I did read all that news. Okay. I read all the news. The heck with it. We're done with the news. How about more helicopters? The only time I print anymore is to print the news. Because it's just easier to do it off of off a paper than it is to read it off the computer.
We can put a teleprompter up for you.
I can turn my phone into a teleprompter, yep. Or one of my tablets,
yep,
into a teleprompter. That would be geeky even for me. But they do have teleprompter software.
Yeah, I just noticed there was one in StreamYard.
Really?
Yeah. I'm the you may not have it because I'm the host, but
oh right, okay.
But it's one of the buttons in there to bring up. There's a ticker tape and there's colors. I can make a poll.
Huh? Yeah, I can't do any of that. You can do that. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Oh, I should probably talk a little bit more about my
Your new toy.
My new toy. I have a new toy. It's the Pocket Term 35 from Waveshare, and it is a handheld Linux computer. It's a 3.5-inch screen. It's got a keyboard, and it has a Raspberry Pi inside.
Looks like one of those inventory control computers that
salespeople
use. Yeah,
that they have hanging off their hip. And they just sit there and keep hitting the keypad.
Do you have one of these in inventory?
Taking counts.
Yeah.
It's got a battery, a 5,000 milliamp hour battery. I did not read all the news. I guarantee you I did not read all the news.
No, you didn't. You only read two articles.
Here it is. I did have a new one. Ha, 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 ha. Amazon has significantly raised the prices of its hardware devices, jacking them up as much as 60% in some cases. The price explosion impacts Fire TVs, Echoes, Kindles, and Eero's. One egregious example has been cited that is the Echo Dot, one of Amazon's cheapest smart speakers, the price of which jumped 60% overnight from $50 to $80. Amazon said the consumer electronics industry is facing significant increases in memory and storage component costs after absorbing these increases for as long as we could. Small violin. We recently adjusted prices across our product lines. Of course, they're not alone. Just about everybody's hiking prices. If you're one of those tinkerers who's always wanted to build their own cyber deck, here it is. You're in luck. Raspberry Pi has released their official tutorial for building a cyber deck inside a Pelican-style case. But you can use just about any case you like, including a 3D printed case of your own design if you're feeling fancy. Or, of course, you can buy a Pocket Term 35. XAI, which is X's or what used to be Twitter's AI program, has now been accused of training Grok on child sex abuse material, or CSAM, as regulators and courts continue to probe how far the problem goes, and some Grok users have been arrested. Because Grok's terms treat public X posts and Grok's own outputs as training data by default, the publicly Publicly posting an image does not just expose it to viewers, but also feeds it directly into the pipeline XAI uses to train and improve its model and thereby generate further images. So when someone posts child porn, even if it's taken down, it's already been grabbed by Grok for training purposes. While XAI filters out violent content in Grok outputs to exclude it from training data, XAI's terms notably do not specify if CSAM, non-consensual intimate imagery, or not safe for work material are excluded categories. Isn't that special?
Hmm.
NVIDIA is reportedly moving forward to acquire Hugging Face for $12.9 billion with a B dollars. The acquisition could help the hardware giant expand and fortify its deep integration into the wider AI industry. Among other things, Hugging Face is a cloud repository for AI models. Anybody using Ollama knows all about Hugging Face. Similar in some respects to what GitHub is for conventional computer hardware.
Isn't it the alien alien face hugger? No, that's face hugger, not
that's
face
hugger, not hugging face. Developers, and it's a positional.
Yeah.
English is a positional language.
Cat house and house cat. Yeah.
Yeah. Developers and researchers search for models that meet certain criteria, download and run them, and then fine tune them into different variants that then get uploaded back into Hugging Face. The deal is not finalized, so it could still run into trouble ahead, but both parties appear to be actively pursuing it. In a move that will warm the cockles of Dave's heart, that's why I knew I hadn't read this already, the 9,210 milliamp hour dual cell battery in the new Redmi Note 17 Pro Max is the biggest that Xiaomi has fit into any phone it's sold in Europe, and remarkably, in some markets, the phone comes with an even larger 10,000 milliamp hour single cell design. This is a silicon carbon battery, one with a high 16% silicon content, meaning it's more energy dense than regular batteries.
It was just a matter of time. Yep. I kept saying.
And 10.
They got to have something to sell phones. And what better feature, since more and more folks, I don't care what they say, are watching movies and everything else on their phone, and the batteries are dying out.
And 10,000 milliamp hours is the max allowed on an airplane.
Exactly right. It's allowed Xiaomi to fit this huge battery into a phone that's basically the same size as an iPhone 17 Pro Max, but 8 grams lighter and thinner. Fractionally.
Yeah.
Xiaomi said the Redmi Note 17 Pro Max should give you worry-free use for up to, Dave, are you sitting down?
Yep.
3 days.
And that might do it.
Or up to 37 hours of continuous video playback.
Now, see, that makes sense.
Sadly, it is not currently available in the U.S. because of our export restrictions.
Yet.
But we're available in the U.S., so give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-JAZZ. 0415. 10,000 milliamp hours.
But that's been the biggest thing, though. I mean, everybody, you see people constantly walking around. They're at restaurants. What are they doing? Staring at their phone or listening to a movie. You know, I mean, no matter where they go, they're always got their face glued to the phones. I found it amazing when I was driving for Medical Motors. I drive around and see people sitting there, you know, walking down the street, still looking down at their phone. You go into a restaurant or that, family of four, what are they doing? All four of them are glued to their phones.
I was sitting at a stoplight once, and I saw a person walking down the street next to me looking at their phone, walked into a light pole.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I laughed so hard. My tears were running down my face, and I missed the green light. The guy behind me started beeping.
A lot of security cam footage gets posted of that happening and the security people laughing. And half the comments are always, well, why didn't you go help?
Well, yes.
Well, because I'm in, you know, another city just watching security feeds.
Right. I didn't have to help because it wasn't like they were unconscious. They just bumped into a pole.
Yeah, they just run into it. And people, there's all kinds of clips. People are either, they walk into a pond or something or a water fountain.
Right. Mm. Or the little pools in malls.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah.
That one story about the case. There was a Steve Jobs personal memorabilia auction last week. Apparently his stepbrother is closing down their childhood house. And his eighth grade science fair project sold for like $30,000, some ridiculous thing. But one of the cooler things was an Apple One in a Smith Corona typewriter case. And that, that went for almost $500,000.
Yeah, I bet.
And that was really cool.
Yeah.
Custom designed Apple One case.
Nice.
Because the Apple One came as a box of parts.
Right.
And then he had a friend started making the wooden cases that eventually was selling with it for a while.
Right. Right. And that's the point behind many of these Apple Pie cyber decks. You get a case and a keyboard and a screen and a Raspberry Pi. You stick them in some sort of case, whether it's a case you build or 3D print or just buy a Pelican case. Put it all in there, and you can take it somewhere, open it up. It's got a battery. It's got the Pi itself. It's got the screen. It's got the keyboard, and you're done. And and you can you're good to go. Whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
I bought this Pocket Term 35 just for the heck of it from Waveshare. You can buy it as a kit and put your own Raspberry Pi in it, or you can buy it with a Raspberry Pi.
What's the kit without the Pi cost?
That's a lovely question.
Well, that's a good question.
Thanks. Thanks for asking that question. Let me see if I can find that real quick. Again, this is great radio. Waveshare. There it is. It starts at like $88.
That's not bad.
So, yeah, it depends on what you get. I mean, you can get just the case, and then you provide everything, or you can get it with...
Now, that Pi, how much memory say Pi you got in there?
This was a 2-gig Pi 4.
Okay.
And I did that because I wanted longer battery life rather than a faster machine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's fine. But you can go up to like $180 from, you know, from
depending on your needs.
$182. Yeah.
And what you're going to do.
Yeah, exactly right.
Use it with.
And so you can get, you know, you can buy it without the lithium battery, without the Pi, and buy those separately, or you can buy with all of that or some of that or whatever you want to do with it.
I
bought the full kit because that's what I wanted. And then you get to pick your power plug, which is EU or UK or US.
Yep.
And then you can put it together yourself, or you can, I should probably put that, why don't you guys talk for a minute while I put
Now, did you have to, you know, did you have it assembled or did you do it yourself?
I had it assembled. I bought it assembled. Who are you talking to?
You.
That's right. I don't assemble.
Well,
you're a software guy, not a hardware guy.
That's exactly right.
You never know. You've ceased to amaze me at sometimes at some of the stuff that you've gotten into, and it's like, is that the real Nick?
Well,
in my youth, when I could see and my hands were steady.
Yeah.
That is exactly correct. I will, however, be taking this apart because I do want to add a speaker to it. It didn't come with a speaker.
Okay.
And I'm going to buy a speaker from probably Canakit.
Yeah.
It's the standard
little speaker,
little Pi speaker.
Just clips in.
And I'll just put that in.
Yeah.
And that'll be fine. But that's, I think, what I'll be doing. And I'm just, I'm putting up a link to that right now.
One of the things, going back to, you know, another segue away from that is, as far as the Zorin, you know, I told you, I loaded up my wife's machine with Zorin net. Well, she put it on there, you know, or got it up, and she's looking it over and looking it over. And she goes, wait a minute, is this the same machine?
Right.
Because her other machine, you know, with the old Windows, was so slow. Literally, you could turn her machine on, just to turn the monitor on. We don't turn the machine down or anything. Just turning the monitor back on and reloading her browser. You could go back down to the kitchen, get a cup of coffee, fix it, sit there and take a few sips, come back, and it's still loading some of her tabs. And she doesn't have as many as me.
Nobody does.
Thank you. I'm proud of that. But no, now with this Zorin on it, she goes, did you get a new machine for it? I go, no, it's still the same one. And I says, how do you like it? She goes, we're not going back. And I even wound up finding the icons to do her folders, different colors.
Yeah, yeah. I am I'm going to put up a link for something called Calibri OS. We don't have a lot of time to talk about it, but it's new and it's very beta, but it is a non-Linux, not anybody else operating system written entirely in assembly language. It boots up in like half a second. But I'll do that after we get off the air because we are done. And again, it's beta. Don't put it on any machine you expect to actually use. But it's very cool. It just boots up instantly. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank myself because I never do that, and I probably shouldn't. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest. I don't know what I'm doing today. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you? And for heaven's sake, hug your loved ones.